Morning. Today's daf from Baba Basra, Sadi Aleph. We are in Sadi Amud Beis. We're right in the middle of the Amud after the Simanim. We're talking about market. The Gemara yesterday was talking about the adjustments that were made to the market, adjustments that were made to the measurements, adjustments that were made to currency, various regulations that were imposed so that there would be stability in the market. Generally speaking, and certainly what I'm presenting is the Rambam's viewpoint, as I mentioned yesterday. Generally speaking, the Chachamim took a free market stance, and there wasn't much regulation in terms of the market. The way the Rambam presents it, as per the Gemara yesterday, we saw yesterday, where the Gemara said that they are not allowed to profit more than a sixth, the Rambam says that's high nefesh. That's talking about staple foods, where there is some sort of regulation. Masha enke. Now, however, if it comes to other commodities, so the profit margin is not going to be capped. It's just going to be based on what is quote unquote market value. And we are continuing in the Gemara from where we left off yesterday. We've got it right up to the Simanim. The Gemara presents a mnemonic to help us commit the next Gemaras to memory. Otsay peros, ein otsim, bein motzin, bein mistakin, pamayim, bebeitzim, masrim, velo motzin. Okay, so those are code, those are headline words that are going to capture the next bits of Gemara. Tanu Rabbanan. On Sadi Amud Beis. The Gemara continues by quoting a brisa. Otsay peros. So the Gemara over here is talking about people who are really going to be distorting and corrupting the market. So otsay peros, those people who retain the fruit. People who are retaining the fruit, if you take a look at the Rashbam, Rashbam is five lines after the lines start getting wide. Sorry, four lines after the lines get wide. Otsay peros, Rashbam writes, Shekona b'shuk latzram. So what they do is they buy up the market and then they hoard. Limkor biyoker, and they're basically going to create a monopoly by buying all the produce in the market and by hoarding it, and then they're going to totally control the market. The gormish she's yaker ashar, and as a result of that, the market is going to go up significantly. The ika hefset aniyim. And the poor people who cannot afford it are going to stand to lose. Benirali, to be ir sharuba yisrael ma'iri, and the Rashbam says that the problem is when the majority of the city is Jewish, and then you're going to be creating really a lack of food for the Jewish poor. Mava beribis. Next, back to the brisa. So otsay peros are the hoarders of the fruit, trying to control the market. Mava beribis, those who lend with interest. Again, as per the Rashbam, we're talking about lending with interest to Jew. Mekatne eifa, those sellers in the market who use smaller measurements, as per the Gemara that we saw yesterday. That obviously that is a direct violation of the Torah. Of adjusting your measurements so that you'll sell more, but you'll gain more. Mafkiya sharim are those people who create an instability in the market. So alei makazavamer, regarding that, the Torah says this is a navi pasuk in Amos. Alei mar masaya avor hachodesh v'nishbar shever, and the Rashbam. Bit by bit explains how the pasuk relates to all these different people. So we're in the middle of the pasuk, but I'm going to just break it up so that we can say over how each part of the pasuk is indicative of one of these people that we just described. So, for example, Masayavar Chosh Benishbar Shevar. When is the month? When will the month be over and then we'll be able to sell? The Rashbam writes Klamar Nimka Biyoker Lesof Chodesh Acher Achar Yemosa Garen. We'll wait till after the garden. Wait till after the granary, meaning the granary is the time where the prices are the best, and we'll buy the food, we'll hoard the food, we'll wait till afterwards, and then we'll sell. And also, these are mafkiya sharim that are mentioned at the end of the brisa. They are going to be destabilizing the market. Otsrei peros are those people who really hold on to the fruit for a long term. These are people that are just going to be holding on for a month, so they create that kind of instability in the market.
Yeah, just something that this is non-perishable. Because it doesn't make sense to take perishable food and
Right, correct, agreed. Although, again, consider when we're talking about food, we could also be talking about oil and wine and grain.
Right.
And they could stay for a while.
Fruit, though, doesn't make sense.
Agreed.
Vegetables.
Right. V'hashevas nifchas abar. And the what is this a reference to? So again, the Rashbam, Klamar Masai Tagish Nasa Shmita Beniftecha Otzos Bar V'Hainu Otzei Peros. Ah, and now what these people are going to do also is that they're going to hoard all the way to the Shmita year. So the Shmita year is a great time to exploit the market. I'm obviously not condoning, but I just want to make that clear. It's a great time to hoard towards the Shmita year, because now in the market there's a scarcity of the food, supply, demand. Demand is obviously very high, and if you're the one who is the hoarder and the controller of the food, so then you could be selling at really egregious prices. And then back to the Gemara, back to the quoting of the Pasuk Anamos, Lahaktin Eifa Lahaktil Shekel. Okay, this one's pretty straightforward. To diminish the measurement of the Eifa, meaning you're going to be using a smaller measuring cup, and Lahaktil Shekel. So what does that mean, to increase the Shekel near a Li? So I turn right to the Rashbam, Da'ahinam Alva Beribis. This is a reference to people who lend with interest. Shemagdil Shekel, Yidei Havas Ribis. Dimishim Lahaktil Shekel Mamish, Mikatne Eifa Shemasla. In other words, we're not talking about actually adding to the coin itself. It means that you are going to be increasing your coin by lending with interest. Okay, I didn't finish reading the Rashbam, but we're going to go back to the Gemara. Ula avos mozne mirma, and to create a perversion with the mozne mirma, with the scales of deception. Meaning, again, not using fair weights and measurements. So that is a reference to these people. Okay, so the Pasuk Anamos describes these people, and then continuing now in the Pasuk Uksiv, same Perek Anamos, Nishbasha Megon Yaakov im eshkach lanetzach kol maaseim. Kadosh Baruch Hu says, let's see if I forget what they did. Now, rhetorical, obviously, meaning a Kadosh Baruch Hu will not forget what they did, and a Kadosh Baruch Hu will hold them to task for their manipulation and the perversion of the market. Continuing in the Gemara. Otzer Peros could go, Ma Namar of Yochan can go Shapte Otzer Peros. It's a funny line of Gemara. The Gemara just wants to give an example of somebody who hoards the fruit, and the Gemara points to a personality that lived in the time of Yochanan who was a hoarder of fruit. What do we learn from this? I'm not really sure. Meaning, I guess it was a contemporary example that spoke to them, but I'm not really sure what we, the readers of the Gemara, gain from this line. Okay, Avod Shmuel. Now the Gemara is going to tell us that there are a couple of Amoraim, and here specifically the father of Shmuel, Shmuel himself. It's interesting. The father of Shmuel is always referred to as Avod Shmuel, meaning he doesn't go by his own name. His reference point is his son. Okay, that's just the way it is. Why that is, I don't know. But the Gemara is going to now contrast that both the father of Shmuel and Shmuel himself are going to try to control the market. Again, it's a deregulated market. There's no significant regulations. But what they're going to do is basically various strategies in order to make sure that the price in the market is a fair and accurate price. So let's go over strategy of Avud Shmuel, the father of Shmuel. What would he do? Mazman l'peri b'tar. So, when we were at the early market, the word charef in relationship to produce means that it's the early time. You see that word at the end of Parshas Ve'era when describing the early harvest and the late harvest, because the hail only influenced and affected the early harvest, not the later harvest. But anyway, so what Avud Shmuel did is that even before it was like really, really strong market time, so Charfa de Tara, so it was like early harvest, so he would sell. Now at that point in time, the price in the early market was not the best, because the market wasn't filled with the product, it wasn't filled with produce. But what he would do is basically he would set the price. And being that, of course, he wanted to set it to the benefit of the consumer, so he would set it at a low price. Leper b'tara charfa, kitara charfa. So, just one correction, by the way. The word charif in this context means at a time where there's most market activity. So even though he was selling it before the market was at its height in terms of buying and selling, in terms of just the volume, he would be setting the price at the low, whatever. At the beneficial price, and basically he would be sending it so that later nobody in the market would be like, hey, I want to charge more. The price was pretty much already set by Avud Shmuel. The Gemara contrasts that with his son. Yeah, Osa Adam, sorry. Charfa Ketar Charfa Shmuel Berei. Now, as far as Shmuel, his son was concerned, so what did he do? So he had a different strategy. Mashal Peru Mazman Lubatara Afela Ketar Charpa. So what he would do is that he would hoard fruit, but not like what we described earlier. Meaning earlier, the people that would be hoarding fruit would be doing so in order to exploit the market. What Shmuel did was that he hoarded fruit so that we got to the end of the harvest, and we got to the end of the high volume in the market, and now there was less in the market, and now it allowed for the sellers to sell at a slightly higher price. At that point, Shmuel would then release his hoarded fruit, and he would be selling it at a discount, not a discount, but at the lower prices, and that's the way he would try to influence market and market prices. Shach mitam. Which one of the strategies was better? The Gemara tells us that the Gemara has a very strong opinion which one was better. So tava d'aba midabra. Father's better than the son, meaning that the strategy employed by Avud Shmuel is better than that of Shmuel. So of course that's interesting. I think again you don't have to take me so seriously, but I think meaning obviously if Avud Shmuel is better, so then why did Shmuel deviate from his father? But you could say this with the benefit of hindsight. So I guess the Gemara can take stock in terms of which one had a better long term effect. So the Gemara says that the father's strategy was better. My taima, tara de ravach ravach. Because once you set the price of the market, that's pretty much going to be how the price is going to be. So setting the price at the beginning is a better strategy in terms of trying to make sure that no sellers are going to be exploiting the market, rather than Shmuel's strategy of hoarding the fruit and then trying to set it into the market at a later point in time when there's a possibility of the price going up. Amar Rav Osa Adam is Kabo Otze. Now, we spent some time already between yesterday and today going over how bad it is to hoard fruit. What about if it's your own fruit? Meaning, you didn't buy it in the market, but it's just simply your own fruit. So to which Rav says that you're allowed to do. In other words, if it's your own fruit and you would like to store it, storage of your own fruit that you grow on your property, that's fine. Tanya Nami Hacha, the Gemara quotes a Braisa that is totally on board with this idea. Einot in Paris, Varim Shiesh, Bam Chai Nefesh. You're not allowed to hoard, store fruit that have Chai Nefesh, that are staple foods that people need to live on. Kigon Yenish Shman and Veslasos, wine, oil, flour. Aval tavlin, but if it comes to condiments, kamon, papilin, mutter, so that's fine, meaning that's not chayi nefesh, these aren't staple foods. Obviously, food goes better with condiments, but they're not staple foods. You want to hoard that, that's fine. And all this is only if you buy it in the market. But the Braisa says exactly what Rav said, and that is that if it's your own food that you grow on your property, so for that there is no restriction of not storing it, you're allowed to store it. Now, in Eretz Yisrael, you're allowed to store food for 3 years. Specifically, Ereshis Shvius and Motzei Shvius. We know that in the Shemitah year, we're not going to be working the land. So, in anticipation of that, so what you can do is you can put food away for the year prior to the Shemitah year, for the Shemitah year itself, and for the post-Shemitah year as well. So those are times in Eretz Yisrael where there is a full endorsement and an allowance in order to store your fruit. Now if it's years of famine, so then you're not allowed to store anything. Being that it is such a delicate market, there are so few resources out there, so already there is a panic in the market, there's a certain anxiety in the market, and anything you store, meaning even if it's charuvin, right? For those of you who have your favorite Tu B'Shvat experience of trying to get your teeth into the charuv fruit, it's a strange fruit. I don't know how it became so popular, but anyway, I don't even know why they call it fruit. But okay, my best guess is that it once upon a time it tasted good. But anyway, either way, so it's not the finest of fruits, but in a time where there's a real scarcity, it's a shnas betzoros, it's a year of famine, so anytime you hoard anything, you store anything, it really will cause a run in the market. So during shnei betzoros, because of the very tenuous conditions of the market, don't Don't hoard anything. The Gemara's terminology is it causes a curse in the market, meaning it's simply not going to be good for the market conditions. Rabbi Yosef Bar Chanina says to his attendant, his servant, his name was Puga, poke outserly perish loshanim. Store food for the upcoming 3 years. It happens to be that they are the eve of the Shemitah year itself, and the post-Shemitah year. Okay, in other words, basically, like the Braisa allowed, the Gemara is just simply telling us Maisa Shahaya. There was an Amara who actually did this, meaning he actually stored food for those 3 years. It is not only a Braisa, but Halach LaMaisa. It's a practical Halach as well. Tanu Rabbanan, we are towards the bottom of Tzadi Amud Beis. Ein Motzi in Paris, Eretz Yisrael, Dvarim Sheish Mem Chayin Nefesh. Exporting fruit out of Eretz Yisrael, the Braisa says, don't do it. Don't export the fruit outside of Eretz Yisrael. Kigon Yenish Matzah Veslasos, for example, and we're talking about staple foods like wine, like oil, like flour. Rav Yehuda ben Becerra Matir B'Yayin. Interesting position, Rav Yehuda ben Becerra. He allows, and not only allows, but kind of supports. He's a proponent of exportation of wine. Why? Less wine in Eretz Yisrael means less drunk people. Less drunk people is a good thing. So, right, the Chachamim had this very like love-hate relationship with wine. Mostly we see love. We don't see that much hate. But over here, Rav Yehuda ben Becerra was of the opinion that too much wine is just not good for the country. And so, let's export it. Exportation of wine, he was a fan of. And then the Gemara says, as much as we are placing a general ban of exporting staple foods from Eretz Yisrael outside, also, you're not allowed to export from Eretz Yisrael to Syria. Syria was an annexed part of Eretz Yisrael during the times of Bais Rishon, annexed by David HaMelech. It is what the Gemara describes in a number of places as Kibush Yachid. David HaMelech annexed it, but he did not do so with a mandate, with the people's mandate. He did so on his own. So therefore, the status of Syria was a level lower than that of Eretz Yisrael. I'm not saying this is the greatest analogy, but kind of like Puerto Rico. Again, it's just right to be slightly tongue in cheek, but it's certainly something to think about. So it did not have the full status of Eretz Yisrael. And so this ban of not exporting staple food included not taking food from Eretz Yisrael into Syria. Rebbe Matir, now Rebbe was okay with it. Okay with what? Top of Sadi Aleph Amid Aleph, Mehar Pachya Lehi Parchya. Rashbam explains, without the Rashbam, I would have been lost. The Rashbam explains, so Miparchia is the last city at the border of Eretz Yisrael to the first city on the border of Syria. Since they were so close to one another, so that proximity gave a certain allowance to be able to export from that city to that city. Exactly how that works, Gemara does not give us any more information. But, okay. Anyway, Tanu Rabbanan, top of Tzadi Aleph, Amud Aleph, the Gemara continues on these discussions. One is not allowed to make a profit in Eretz Yisrael with staple foods. Yenos, Shmanim, Veslasos. Like wine, oil, and flour. What does that mean? Not allowed to profit. Yeah, exactly. How do people make a living? So the Rashbam over here explains his opinion in terms of what the Gemara means. Ein Mistakrim, the Rashbam writes, it's the second Rashbam on Tzadi Aleph Amud Aleph. Liknos Yain V'Shem V'Sosos Mi Bala Baislam Korbishuk. The Rashbam says, you know what the Braisa means? Braisa doesn't mean that you're not allowed to sell these staple foods in Eretz Yisrael. Of course you are. What you're not allowed to do is basically turn it from hand to hand. You know, send it from the wholesaler to the distributor, to another distributor, to the end user. In other words, that you're not allowed to do because, as the Rashbam points out, the more hands that it goes through, the more money it's going to cost. Ela bala bais, I'm reading the Rashbam. Ela bala bais atzmo yimkor letzrichim, kemosh yimkor lechenvani. What the inheritance saw, what the expectation is that the landowner is the one who's going to be selling these staple foods directly to the consumer, and that will keep the cost down for the consumer. The Rashbam also points out over here that, let's say, you're not just simply a distributor, but you're going to make bread out of it. The Rashbam says that's fine. even in Eretz Yisrael. So if you're going to buy the wheat from the landowner, and then you're going to turn it into bread, otherwise known as you're a baker, so the Rashbam says, even that's fine in Eretz Yisrael. It is just simply the general process which we normally do, which is to go from the grower to the wholesaler to the distributor to the end user. The Rashbam says that's what the Gemara is banning. Aval limkor adavar be'ein kamo shekono osami balabais asur. Da balabais sami matzim hazman lebelo torach. The homeowner can sell it. It's not going to be much trouble for him. Okay. Obviously, it's more work, but in other words, that's the idea as the Rashi understands the Gemara in terms of what you're not allowed to do in Eretz Yisrael in terms of making profit. No middlemen. Cut the middlemen out. Amar Olav Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah Shai Mishtaker B'Yayin V'Shemen. They said regarding Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah that he would turn a profit on oil, on wine and oil. Meaning, despite the fact that the Gemara just placed a ban on middlemen and distributors of these products in Eretz Yisrael, Rav Elazar ben Azariah, for oil and wine, had no problem selling them through distributors, even though the price is going to go up. Gemara explains why. B'yayin sevel like Rav Yehuda. Now, as far as wine is concerned, so go back to what we learned just a couple minutes ago. Rav Yehuda ben Becerra supported the exportation of wine out of Eretz Yisrael. He didn't want wine in Eretz Yisrael. So similarly, Rav Elazar ben Azariah didn't mind if wine costed a little bit more. In other words, so that means that there's less wine consumption in Eretz Yisrael. He felt that was a good thing. And as far as Shem and Basri, the Rav Elazar ben Azariah, Shchech Mishcha, and as far as oil is concerned, there was already in his community in Eretz Yisrael a lot of oil. So just because it's now the oil is going to go through distributors, it's not going to really jack up the price of the oil. And there is an ample supply of oil, and so therefore he was not worried about a run on the market of oil, and the distributors were not going to influence the price that much. Tanur Rabbanan, continuing. When it comes to eggs, so you're not allowed to double the price of eggs. What exactly does that mean? Well, it seems pretty clear what it means, but the Gemara is going to offer two pshatim. Amar Mari Bar Mari. Talk about an interesting name, right? Mari Bar Mari. We had it. So Pliga Bar Rav Shmuel, so the Gemara brings down a machlokas, chadamar chatre. So one pshat is a simple pshat, which is that you're not allowed to double its value. sorry. Oh, okay. I'll first explain, and then I'll go back to a Rashi that I missed. But you're not allowed to double its value, meaning if you bought it for one, you're not allowed to sell it to two. In other words, you are going to be regulated in terms of how much profit you can make. Now, didn't we say that, generally speaking, when it comes to staple foods, there is a regulation, which is that you're not allowed to charge more than a sixth. So over here, by eggs, so it's capped now at 100%. Right, two times its value. So now I'll go back to the Rashbam, which I skipped earlier. So are eggs considered a staple food? Nireli, the Rashbam writes regarding the Dibur HaMaskel BeBeitim. Nireli mishum debeitim ein b'em chai nefesh. Eggs are not a staple food. Kol kach. V'gam torch meruba v'revach muat hu la'ani mechazeh b'ayaros likno beitim. And as far as a poor person who's looking for the basic necessities of what he needs, so he's not going to be looking for eggs. It's not a staple food, writes the Rashbam. That's why, says the Rashbam, you're allowed to profit more on eggs because it's not a staple food. Again, since Rashbam is consistent with the Rambam that I quoted yesterday, I quoted in the beginning of this morning, and that is that the regulations of capping profits at no more than the 18% is only for staple foods. Non-staple foods, you can charge more. Why then the Gemara over here only pointing to eggs as opposed to other foods? Okay, I don't know. But anyway. Is this now a truism regarding eggs and all non-staple foods, or is it just specific to eggs? Again, there's much to explore on these Gemaras, but I'm saying over a simple pshat. V'chana mar tagla tagra. Now, another pshat regarding the eggs is when it says you're not allowed to double eggs, it means you're not allowed to double the middleman. Meaning, like we said earlier, it should go straight from the grower, or in this case, the farmer with his all of his chickens, straight to the consumer, but not go through all those middlemen, which are going to increase the price. Tanu Rabbanan. Next brisa. Masrin al prakmatia. Ve'afilu b'shabbos. We're going to daven to Kadosh Baruch Hu over prakmatia. Now, prakmatia is a term in the Gemara that that's used to describe general business. Over here, in this case, prakmatia basically means that the market is out of control. And prices are out of control. So if this is in fact the case, so we can daven to Kadosh Baruch Hu. Kadosh Baruch Hu is the controller of markets. Obviously, we saw earlier this morning, Shmuel, Avua de Shmuel, so they tried to influence the market, but ultimately the market and its fluctuation is controlled by Kadosh Baruch Hu. So we are allowed to petition the Kadosh Baruch Hu, Ve'afilu b'Shabbos, and even if it means that we're going to petition them on Shabbos. Now the Rashbam over here has a slightly different gears in the Gemara than what we had, and you could see it also in the Bach as well. The Rashbam says that we're talking about where it's prakmatia shehuzla, not where the market went up, but just the other way. The market went down.
Deflation.
So deflation. So that's a bad thing. And the Rashbam points out over here, so we want the prices to really go back up, meaning don't we want prices to be down? So the Rashbam writes over here, I'm reading the Rashbam inside, we're talking about fine clothing. So there, if the prices go up, it's not so bad for the aniyim. They're not going to be buying these fine clothing. So for commodities like that, so where now the market is just not favorable towards the sellers, so you can daven even on Shabbos. Shabbos, you're normally not allowed to petition the Kadosh Baruch Hu. But if we're talking about a real decline in the economy that's affecting so many people, so then you can daven on Shabbos as well. I'm Rav Yochanan Kagon Kli Pishon Bebavel V'yayim V'shem Beret Yisrael. What are these upscale items that we can ask a petition of Kadosh Baruch Hu that the prices go back up? Flax in Bavel, oil and wine in Eretz Yisrael. These are high-end products. I'm Rav Yosef. V'hu dizal v'kam asar b'shisa. And Rav Yosef says that we're talking about where the price is so deflated that what normally you would have bought 10, so now it went down to 6.
That's inflation.
Oh. Yeah. V'hu dizal kokach v'kam asar b'gadim b'demei. Ah, right. Right. What you could have bought with 6, now you can buy 10. Okay, there we go. That's the Rashbam's pshat. Okay, Tanu Rabbanan. Yes.
Regarding petition on Shabbat, is it just for flat, not for personal?
It has to, right. It has to, right. Personal request on Shabbos, you're not allowed to do. I know we make mishaberichs, but for personal requests, we don't. You're not allowed to do. That's why they took it out of the Shmoneh Esrei. They took out the 13 brachos from the middle of the Shmoneh Esrei. Okay, Tanu Rabbanan. Gemara quotes another brisa. Ein yotzei me'aretz l'chutz la'aretz. One is not allowed to leave Eretz Yisrael to outside of Eretz Yisrael. Elim kein amdu sasayim b'sela, unless the market conditions in Eretz Yisrael are so bad that you cannot even buy 2 sa of wheat for a sela. Now, of course, we don't speak in terms of what are the normal prices in Eretz Yisrael, but obviously, in the context of the Gemara, it's very clear that is an exorbitant amount of money for such little grain. So, once the prices get to that point in time, so you're allowed to leave Eretz Yisrael. Am Rabbi Shimon Emesai Bezman Sheinu Motzi Likach Avam Avav Bezman Sheinu Motzi Likach Afilu Am Dasa Besela Lo Yatsa. That's only true if you can't get. But if you're in a situation where you can get, even though the market conditions are such where you're going to have to be spending a lot of money, but it is available, so then still you're not allowed to leave. Under those circumstances, you're not allowed to leave. Even if you can only with your sela buy 1 sa'a, which is obviously half of what the Gemara mentioned earlier, but if there is still an ability to get, if it's available in the market, you're not allowed to leave. V'chein ayar v'shimam ben Yochai Omer. And Rabbi Shimon Yochai taught us Elimelech Machlon Vekilian Gedol Ador Hayu Upartis Ador Hayu. And so, if you saw this coming, meaning we're talking about leaving Eretz Yisrael as a result of famine, so brings us to the Megillas Rus, four prakim in which the Torah tells us a short, powerful maisa regarding Boaz. Let's start backwards. Let's start at the beginning. Mm-hmm. Elimelech left Eretz Yisrael as a result of the fact that there was a scarcity of food in Eretz Yisrael, specifically in Beis Lechem. So the Gemara over here points out, and we're going to be doing a number of points regarding Sefer Rus. Today's daf in Sadi Aleph is going to be a lot of details regarding Megillas Rus. So we start off with the statement made by Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, which is that Elimelech, Machlon, and Kilion. Elimelech, together with his two sons, Machlon and Kilion, were Gedolei Hador Hayu. So they were the leaders of the generation. Parnasei Hador Hayu. They were the supporters of the community. And they were punished for what reason? Because they left Eretz Yisrael. And even though it was a famine, they were not allowed to leave Eretz Yisrael. When she comes back, so everybody was like surprised. And they said, is this Naomi? My Hazos Naomi. So what does that mean? Is this? I'm Rav Yitzchak. Amru. Chazisim Naomi. She yatsa samaritz lechutz aretz. Ma altala. Look, she left Eretz Yisrael. She went to chutz aretz. And look what became of her as a result of that. Meaning, basically, the Gemara is reading that this tochacha, this rebuke, is actually encrypted in the Pesukim that that Naomi was censored for having left Eretz Yisrael. Obviously, it was not only her decision. She had her husband as well. But the Gemara over here uses this opportunity to say, to point out that you're not allowed to. V'amar Rav Yitzchak, Oso Hayom Shabbat Rus Ma'amoviyal Eretz Yisrael Meis Isho Shabawas. And as long as we're on the topic of Rus, the Gemara continues, on the day that Rus goes back to Eretz Yisrael together with her mother-in-law. So and on that very day, so Meisa Ishto Shabawas, the wife of Boaz, dies. Behind the Dharma Ishi, and that's what people would say, Adol Shachiv Shichva Kaima Manu Beise. That before the death departs, before the person dies, so the replacement is already put into place. Okay. Kadosh Baruch Hu prepares. Just as a simple question, which I don't have really a good answer to, meaning in those days, you're allowed to marry more than one wife. So why did Boaz's wife necessarily need to die in order for Boaz to marry to marry Rus? I mean, to us, the question seems a little strange because we
the thing is that maybe at that time having a second wife was optional, but now he requires the second wife.
Right. Okay. You have to say something along those lines. Okay, anyway, but the Amarava Baravuna, Amarav Ifsan Zeboaz. Now, in terms of identity, Boaz mentioned in Megillas Rus is Ifsan mentioned in Shoftim. Meaning, if you turn to Sefer Shoftim, Perikud Beis, 12th chapter, Sefer Shoftim, so you're going to be reading one of the Shoftim is Ifsan. And the Gemara says that Ifsan and Boaz are one and the same person. Maikamash Malan, Kiduch the Rava Baravuna. The Gemara says, now that's coming to teach us another point, which is Amarav Baravuna, Amarav. Boaz made 120 parties for his children. He had, as we'll see in just a moment, 30 sons, 30 daughters, and that resulted in 120 parties. Now, I know the math doesn't work out. That means that he only had 60 children in total. You like how I added the word only? He had only 60 children in total. How does that come out to 120 parties? So the Rashman points out that for every one of his children's chasna, so he made two parties. Right, one by his in-laws, one by himself. So basically, you take the number of children that he had, multiply it by two, and that's how you got to 120 parties.
Maybe it was bar mitzvah or bat mitzvah.
Right, it could be. Anyway, but what I said over is the Rashbam. So the Asabos Lavanah Shenemar Vayilo Shloshim Banim Shloshim Banos. So we're now quoting the Pesukim in Shoftim. 30 sons, 30 daughters. Shalach Achutz of Shloshim Banos. Hayvi Lavanav Min Achutz, and he married off all of them. For the girls, he sent them to their new in-laws. House. But the minute back then is that the girl went to the husband and the husband's family. So his daughters he sent off to other families. Daughter-in-laws he took into his house. And he judged the Jewish people for a total of 7 years. I gave attribution to the Rashbam. It's the Gemara. The Gemara tells us that of the 120 chasnas, it resulted from the fact that he made two parties for every one of his children got married, 60 children times 220. Uvekulon lo zimin is Manoach. So, and he never invited Manoach to any one of his parties. Manoach was the father of Shimshon. And they, obviously they overlapped in Sefer Shoftim, Shimshon is the next Shofet. So Manoach, the father of Shimshon, was never invited to any one of the 120 parties that was made by Iftzan, who is Boaz and Amar. And in terms of the justification of why he didn't invite Manoach, here comes a rough line of Gemara. Kudna akara b'may parali. That sterile mule, how is he going to pay me back? Meaning, there's no way that I'm going to invite him to my parties, to my children's party, because Manoach himself doesn't have any children. That's the expression of sterile mule. A mule, by definition, is sterile. And so that's how we refer to Manoach. That is rough talk. I know it. Obviously, just a little bit of self-awareness. I know that that's a rough way to describe somebody. And there's no way that he's going to pay me back, meaning that I'm going to have wedding after wedding after wedding, and I know he's not going to be making any wedding for his children. He has no children. And therefore, there will never be any reciprocity. I'm never going to get invited to his children's chasnas. Now,
whoever was invited was supposed to bring a gift. So mm-hmm. Increased benefit to Boaz benefit rather than...
I'm gonna make your point. I'll just put in a question and answer form. So the obviously Iftzan is a shofet, he's a judge of the Jewish people. Meaning we're going to assume that there's a basic requisite requirement of being an upstanding individual to be a shofet of the Jewish people. This is not the kind of talk you normally hear or expect from a shofet. And meanwhile, this is how he's describing Manoach, Kudna Kara, the right sterile mule, and he's not going to pay me back. And it seems very small. Let me say over the Marsha, and then I'll take more. But the Marsha says it's a beautiful pshat. The Marsha says that when Boaz / Iftzan, when he knew that he was going to be making all these chasnas for Manoach, so he knew that he was going to be getting, as any guest comes to a chasna, so you're going to be giving a gift. Now, this is such a great point by the Marsha. Now, generally speaking, you know that you're going to at one point in time there's a reciprocal opportunity to go to their children's chasna, and you're going to be giving them a gift. So basically, there's almost like a tacit understanding. Yes, you'll come to my kid's chasna, you're giving me gifts, but then I'm going to go to your kid's chasna, and I'll give you gifts as well. And we have this understanding that we're basically going to be repackaging gifts. Mm-hmm. But from Iftzan's standpoint, in other words, he knew that for every one of his parties that he made, if he were to invite Manoach, Manoach would be giving a gift, and he would have no chance to reciprocate. And we know, Sonei Matanos Yichya, that generally speaking, that people should avoid receiving gifts with never an opportunity to repay the gift that was given to them. So a person shouldn't do that. So the Marsha says that Iftzan / Boaz never wanted to be in that position where he's just going to be getting gift after gift from Manoach with never an opportunity to pay him back.
Actually, this interpretation says that he was actually showing sensitivity to him, because he was saying that if he comes to all my chasnas and he cannot reciprocate, he's going to feel bad about it.
Yeah.
So he didn't want to force
right,
him.
Right, okay.
But it was like from a point of sensitivity, not from
right.
Like,
the book by Rabbi Moshe Miller, I'm sure he will, right? He will give it.
Yeah, of
what's happening here.
Right, the give and the take. Yes, also, yes. Tana v'kula meisa b'chayav. And the Gemara says that they, all them, meaning all 30 sons, all 30 daughters of his son died during his lifetime. B'hainu d'amirin sh'b'chayechad yalat r'shisen shisen l'amalech ichpo v'olid chad d'mishisen zaris. And the Gemara points out that the last child that he had in his life, meaning he lost all 60 of his children, and the last child that he had in his life, that was the one that he had together with Rus, so that one was more impactful and had more lasting effects. I mean, I'll state the obvious, but the child that he had with Rus ends up becoming the grandfather of, great-grandfather of David HaMelech, which eventually also is going to yield Mashiach as well. So that one child that he had was greater, exceeded than that of the 60 that he had prior. Okay. Again, more mnemonics. Melech Avram, Esther Shanim, Sheniftar, Nisnase Levada. And now we continue in the Gemara. Amar Rav Chanan Barav, Amar Rav Elimach V'samon Neploni Amon V'avi Naman Kulam B'nei Nachshon B'nei Minad Avain. The personalities of Elimelech and Salmon and Ploni Almoni, the unnamed person in the end of Sefer Rus, and the father of Naomi, so they were all Bnei Nachshon and Aminadav, they were all the children of Nachshon and Aminadav. So my Kamash Malan, so the Gemara says, and we need to know that why? Even those people have Zchus Avos, Nachshon and Aminadav, who over the last couple of weeks you heard a lot of, right, by the Az Yashir, by Kriyas Yamsuf. So obviously his descendants had a lot of Zchus Avos. They had a lot of merits of their father. The father provided tremendous Zchus for their children. But it's not going to help if you leave Eretz Yisrael to go to Eretz Yisrael, to go to Chutz Avos. So the Gemara over here gives us, this is not trivial, but it's trivia. Meaning, it's a certain details of names of people who, if you ask, you know, you're a Jew on the street, you know, can you name these people? So your Jew on the street will not be able to name the people. If, however, you know Gemara and you know Shas, you know the end of the fifth parak of Baba Basra, so now you'll be able to properly identify these people. So the mother of Avraham, her name was Amatlaya Bas Karnival. Ime Dahaman, Amatlaya Bas Orvate. Now the mother of Haman, interestingly, also share the same name. She was Amatlai, daughter of Orvasev, Simancha. And just a good way to remember is Tamitami Tahor Torah, that Avraham's mother was the daughter of a carnival. I don't know what animal it is, but basically a kosher animal. Masha Enkein Haman was the son of Amatlai, who was the daughter of Orvase, Orev, a non-kosher bird. So kosher to Avraham, not kosher to Haman. A mnemonic to help you remember. Imid to David, who was the mother of David. Her name is not mentioned once in Tanakh. The Gemara here tells us. Nitzavta bat Ada El Shema. That's her name. Ima de Shimshon, the mother of Shimshon, once again, never recorded in Tanakh. Always referred to as Eshes Manoach. Her name was Tzalapunis. And V'achtein, the sister of Shimshon, was Nashian. Ma lamai nafkamina. The Gemara says, okay, and we need to know this. Why? Shuvah saminim. We need to know this as a response to the heretics. The Rashbam writes over here, four lines from the bottom. Shishon l'lan yosef elu minashim acheros ki depreciates time of anu meshivin lam shemasolanu nevi'im balpeh. We have a Masorah. We have a tradition. It's not that these are just personalities that were fabricated. They're real people. They have real mothers and they have, you know, real relatives. And it's a way of responding to the heretics that these are just not these are not stories. Amrav Chanan Barav Amrav Esther Shanim Nechbash Avram Avinu. Avram Avinu spent 10 years in jail. The I'm sure it's no coincidence. By the way, Yosef also spent. Right, he spent really 12 years in jail, but those last 2 years, somehow I'm able to separate. But he also spent 10 years in jail, plus two. Okay, anyway, yes. So Avram Avinu spent 10 years in jail. Shalosh b'kusa v'sheva b'kardo. So 3 years he spent in the jail in Kusa. That name should sound familiar, because the Gemara described time and again the Kusim. Right, we call them the Samaritans, the Shomronim. But basically, they were the people who were hundreds of years after Avraham Avinu, thousands of years, really, after Avraham Avinu, they were the ones who, not thousands, but, hundreds of years after Avraham Avinu, they were the ones who were the replacements of the northern tribes, the northern 10 tribes. Anyway, Avraham Avinu spent 3 years in Kusa, 7 years in Kardu. Avdimi Maradam Masni Ipcha, he had it the other way around, 7 years in Kusa, 3 years in Kardu. Amarav Chista. Ivra Ziri Dekusa Zeor Kazdim. The truth of the matter is that the Ibra Ziri of Kusa is none other than the Orkazdim that we make reference to in relation to Avram Avinu. Amar Khan Barava Amarav Osayam Shinift Avram Avinu and Olam Mamdu Kogodole Umasa Olam Vishura. On the day of the death of Avram Avinu. So the great people of his generation stood in a shura, stood in a line. This was at a funeral. Of Amru Oilola Olam. Woe to the world, Sha'avad. Manigo, Karbinata. Woe to the world that lost its leader, woe to the ship that lost its captain. The Avram Avinu was a world leader, and they knew it, and that's how they eulogized him at his funeral. Hamisnase lechol rosh. Let's go a little bit further this morning. He lifts him above all others. Amrachan barava, amarava filuish karganasa. Mishamayim ukmila. Right? HaKadosh Baruch Hu lifts leaders. And don't think that when we say leaders over here, we mean just the leader, meaning the president of a country, the king of a nation, meaning anyone who has a leadership role that is mandated and orchestrated by HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Even if you are just in charge of irrigation, okay, that's a leadership position, and that was Min HaShamayim. That came from Hashkacha, from divine providence. And don't think otherwise, says the Gemara. I'm Rav Chiya bar Avin, I'm Rav Yeshua ben Karcha, Chas Vasham Shafilo Matzah Subin Lo Yatzo. Now, Rav Yeshua ben Karcha says, now as far as, let's go back to Elimelech and Naomi and the sons Machlon and Kilion. So they left Beis Lechem as a result of a famine. Now, Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai and Amud Aleph, today's Gemara, said very clearly that their punishment came as a result of them leaving Eretz Yisrael. The Rabbi Yeshua ben Karcha disagrees. If there was any food in Eretz Yisrael, they would have stayed. How does he know that? How can he argue with Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai? All good questions. But this is his Masorah, that even if there was some food in Eretz Yisrael, they would have stayed. There was no food in Eretz Yisrael, and that's why they left. So on this term, they didn't deserve the punishment. So then, prompts the next question of the Gemara. So then, why were they punished? Because they had a chance, an opportunity to daven on behalf of the generation. So leaving Eretz Yisrael, that they were legitimized in doing so. Not caring enough to daven on behalf of the brothers and sisters. So for that, they were punished. The Pasuk in Yeshayahu says that when you cry to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, so you will be saved. Meaning, you need to daven on behalf of others. Now the Gemara says that you're not allowed to leave Eretz Yisrael in a time of famine, in a time of scarcity. So the Gemara says, well, yes, yes, and no. If we're talking about maus bezol, where money is cheap, peres biyoker, but the cost, the price of the price of food is really high. So in other words, there is a way for you and I to obtain money. It's just that we're going to need a lot of it in order to buy food. So then we have to stay in Eretz Yisrael. Aval, maus biyoker. But let's say money is at a premium, meaning just there's not a lot of currency circulating. And so obtaining money is going to be extraordinarily hard. Afilo amda arba sain b'sela. So even if I can buy four sa with the sela, which relative to what we learned earlier this morning, we were talking about two sa, we were talking about one sa. Four sa is a good amount of wheat. But if there's such a run on currency, so then we do have in fact a legitimate reason, a legitimate argument to leave. Okay, let's pause over here. Tomorrow we'll finish up with the Agarata that takes us to the end of the perek. Yitzhak Hashem, tomorrow morning we'll start the new perek. Okay. A quick recap: we talked more about market conditions, some market regulations. Spent a lot of time today talking about not leaving Eretz Yisrael, even if it means that there's a challenging economic times in Eretz Yisrael. Led us to discussing Elimelech, Naomi, Machlon, Kilion. More of that coming up at the end of the parak, coming up tomorrow morning. And everyone have a great day.